So welcome to part two of my interview on A Degree of Interest with me, Monique Chambers, and Dr. Mario Casar. We're talking about students coming from overseas to the University of Malta. And we've spoken in our previous program about, you know, people coming from China and Korea and Japan and North America, etc., where obviously they're leaving home to come and live in Malta, and they're often quite young. What happens? How do they sort of settle into Malta? Where do they live? Who looks after them?
Okay, well, first of all, there is a very important process involved. So as soon as they submit an application, the students, obviously, they would be eagerly waiting for a reply from university. We have a team of people in my office who follow up the students from the point the student sends a request up to the point that the students enroll in Malta as a student. Because we have found out that this is a very delicate period, because during this period of time, students most probably have applied to other institutions. So that is very important to follow them. However, we follow them when it comes to any questions they have about the course, any questions they have about sending documents, I don't know, until the application is closed. Then we have a dedicated team of people at the international office who would help the students settle in Malta. And when I say dedicated, they are very dedicated, because they, especially if the students, they require a visa, They follow them up closely until they get the visa, and there is a process. They have to pay a fee. We help them as the student recruitment team. So what would happen during this period is that my office and the international office will be working hand in hand to help the student, so that we will know what a student, because we have to avoid a situation where a student is speaking to Mr. X and then he speaks to Mr. Y, and Mr. Y doesn't know anything about the story. So we have this idea of a one-stop shop. Okay? Once the visa is issued and everything is in place, we also put them in contact with the accommodation here at the university, so that nowadays they have the option of either coming to stay at the campus hub, because which is the residence right next to campus, or they can prefer to stay in apartment. I mean, it's up to the student, but we do offer them the options available. Obviously, we encourage them to be as close to campus as possible, ideally staying at the residence because it's close to campus. And then when they are here with a visa, our international office would help them and would be following them for the residence permit. So the students, they will have to fill in multiple forms, unfortunately for them.
Welcome to the world.
Exactly. And then they apply for a residence permit. Obviously, once a residence permit is issued, the students then they will be in Malta legally, and they, as I said in the other program, I mean, they can travel freely in the Schengen area. However, as you mentioned, I mean, some students, they will be shocked, culturally shocked, and we see this very often. That's especially students coming from countries, from Asian countries, for example. Where something that comes to mind is one particular student once told me that she was missing the food. And these things don't cross your mind until you hear them. I mean, and we also found out that there is a problem. We figured out that there is a problem on campus when we started to increase the Chinese community on this campus. I mean, we don't offer Chinese food to these students.
So in the residence, they have their independent accommodation, or do they have like a room and they share a kitchen, or food is prepared?
They do. I mean, the residents, they have the option of having a shared kitchen. They can have a kitchen for their own. There are several combinations of accommodation, obviously, depending on the price they can afford. Once they are here, and if they have any issues as students, and this service is not offered just to international students, but to all our students, we have a well-being center where there are a number of counselors, and the students, they can go and speak to these counselors.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that our international office is also always checking on the students. And if there is an issue, anything about accommodation, I mean, the international office is the place where students normally go to seek assistance and to seek help. And they do a very fantastic job. And as I said, I mean, when they see, when they kind of
they have everything on hand, you have people to look after. It's like having aunties, I suppose, isn't it? And uncles.
Yes, exactly. And even when they sense that there is, that there is an issue, like for example a mental health issue, and we see these things as well, unfortunately, they assist the students and encourage them to go to our center, well-being center, where there are a number of psychologists, and then based on the cases, they refer them accordingly. So yes, I mean, we do a lot to try and help our students. I mean, we're not, perhaps we're not doing enough, but we do our best to increase our efforts. Yeah.
Well, it's part of being at university, isn't it? Is learning to cope by yourself.
And, yes, exactly.
You know, other countries, you go off to university in a different town, maybe, but still, you're away from your folks. You're having to fend for yourself, clean your own kitchen, you know, budget, that, all those horrible things. But so you said about 11% of the students at the University of Malta come from overseas. Does the accommodation, is it big enough to have all of those students?
Right now, the accommodation we have can, if I'm not mistaken, can take up to 300 students.
Wow, okay.
But the plans are to increase that to close to 1,000, if I'm not mistaken. So eventually, still it won't be enough to cater for all the student, international students that we have. However, not all the students, they want to stay in a residence.
And I suppose you might get here, settle in, and maybe year two or three, you go off and do your independent thing.
Because something to take into consideration is that these students, they meet with each other. They meet with other students in their classes. And they make friends, and sometimes they decide to move out of the residence and share an apartment.
Yep.
Sometimes it can be cheaper for them. There are students who opt for apartments. Then there are other students who cannot pay, who do not afford to pay the accommodation or an apartment in the vicinities, because the apartments here are quite expensive. The rent is quite high. And they prefer to go a little bit far from campus. They have to catch a bus in the morning, okay, but they're paying probably half of their half than they would be paying in MCDA. So that's a very different.
But you see that. So you say that they do sort of mix together. So you've got these, you know, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, American, Canadian, whatever. You know, students all hanging out together.
Yeah, we're seeing an improvement. To be honest with you, I mean, one of the problems that I see on this campus is that sometimes the locals, although they accept the international students, don't take me wrong, but sometimes they don't feel comfortable, for example, working with a student who doesn't speak Maltese.
Ah, okay.
When they are in a group, for example. But, I mean, if I look back at my time and when I was following an undergraduate degree in 1994, it was different from today. I mean, things have improved considerably, but still, I mean, we have to do more to assist the students and to help them mingle with the local students, and these are things that we are now aware of, and we are trying to find means and ways how to overcome these hurdles, because we do believe, as I said, that word of mouth, it's key. I mean, if the students, they go back to their country or they communicate with another student and they say, listen, I mean, Malta, it's a nice country, it's a cool place, but sometimes the local students, it's very difficult to work with them, you know. I mean, it doesn't reflect good on the institution.
No.
So we are trying our best to overcome these issues. I mean, but obviously, Nothing is perfect.
No, and you're not their babysitters at the end of the day. It is up to them as well to integrate. And there are so many nationalities in Malta as well that
we have overnight different nationalities on campus. Yes.
That's incredible.
It is. From some countries you would have one or two students, but still, I mean, considering it's 90 nationalities.
Quite something. Yeah. I think it's probably more than most people have ever been to, you know, more countries.
Yeah, it's true.
Talk about the qualifications that students come for. Is it across the board? You know, we talked before about conflict resolution, maritime, archaeology and some business.
Mm-hmm.
Do they come for a whole range?
Yes. So medicine and surgery, for example, it's very popular with the Gulf states. So okay. We have a lot of Kuwaiti, Omani students studying on that particular program. Humanities, for example, is also very popular with international students. You have business, which is also popular. And then, obviously, I mean, here we're mentioning mainstream courses. There are these niche courses which tend to attract students from overseas. Like, for example, we've mentioned global maritime archaeology. There is also a course offered by the architecture, which is about conservation, which attracts international students. I mean, there are these niche areas and offered by, in some cases, offered by small institutes or centers, which tends to attract international students from several countries. But the mainstream courses, as I said, I would say the humanities, medicine and surgery, health sciences is also popular with international students, and business. I
mean, things like the business and medicine, for example, do they convert back into, you know, are they sort of legal in their own countries? Because you imagine, like, if you train to be a doctor in Italy, is it the same as training to be a doctor here?
Yes. I mean, if you'll become a doctor, I mean Malta, it's medical school. It's a top.
Mm-hmm, I imagine. Yes.
So we are recognized by the British government, and that means that as a British student, just to give you an idea, coming to Malta to study at our university can go back and practice in UK following. The course in Malta. Likewise, Maltese students following the course here in Malta can go to and work in one of the British hospitals. So that is an agreement between the governments, and that gives obviously that recognition gives us a reputation.
Yes.
But when you mention medicine, it's international in the sense that here at our faculty, they do obviously like most of the other faculties. I mean, their academics, they are in contact, and especially when it comes to research, they research with international academics. So we are always on the ball. So if there is a change in a way or in a procedure, in a medical procedure, I mean, Malta is always kind of updated, to put it this way. And business, for example, it could be several areas. Like, as you well mentioned, if we, for example, mention accountancy, that you're right. I mean, accountancy, we have our laws, and obviously someone who is coming from US, although most of the principles will probably be the same, but that is not the degree for them, because some of the laws might be different in US. But when it comes to marketing, for example, it's all the same. Strategic management, public policy, tourism, they are all the same.
And I'm sure there's something you can do anyway to convert those aspects.
Yes. Like, for example, one course that comes to mind is counseling, for example. I know of students who studied counseling here at this university. When they went back to the States, they were asked to top up their study units, their courses, with another few courses, so that they will get a license in a particular state. But in most of the cases, the degrees offered by the University of Malta, they are recognized, and they are recognized internationally, not just in one country at all.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to A Degree of Interest with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest for the second week running is Dr. Mario Cassar, and we're talking about how international students come to the University of Malta. So I'm fascinated by this. I really wished I'd known about it when I was young, in fact, and you could just pick somewhere else to go. What are the methods that most convert? Is it students looking for places, or is the parents wanting them to go abroad?
Well, again, I mean, one has to distinguish between undergrad and postgrad. If you're looking at undergrad, the involvement of parents, it's pivotal. So I wouldn't say the parents decide for their kids, but yes, they are very influential, especially in Asia, for example. If you're looking at the Chinese students, there is always the influence of the parents. I don't want to generalize, because in some cases, not all the cases. Then as well, if you look at the Japanese, for example, there is the involvement of the parents, and I do understand them. At that age, going all the way to Malta. At postgrad, it's the student who decides, because most of the time the trend is nowadays that you study in one university at undergrad and then you go overseas to study at master's level. And obviously the students following their undergrad degree, they would be searching all the time to find out what courses are on offer. We are aware of this situation, because when we started promoting university, for example, we used to think that since the language of instruction here is English, we must do all our advertising and our promotion in English. Because we thought that that is a prerequisite, as if you cannot even read what we are promoting, you are not good to come to Malta. But we found out that it's not always the student who is actually reading the material that we're providing. Sometimes, and not most of the times, the parents want to read it as well. So nowadays we have our communication in different languages, and sometimes even the tone of voice has to be changed.
Yes, of course.
Because the way you address a Chinese parent is different from addressing, I don't know, someone in Germany, for example.
And you don't tell them it's a party island when you...
Well, exactly. Yes,
you're talking to the parents.
Exactly.
No, but also, kids don't decide at 18 what university they're going to. They probably know when they're 14, 15, and so they might not be speaking English by that point.
Yes and no. I mean, you have students who are very focused that they want to come to Malta. But some of the students, they simply send a number of applications, and this is why I said in the beginning, it's very important that you get back to the students as soon as possible and that you follow them. Because nowadays, there is a lot of competition. And if you're not on the ball and you get back to them, you will lose them. So they submit several applications, and then they start receiving, and they will start doing their assessment, which is the best university.
So do you find lots of Maltese students going overseas now to university? Are the Maltese numbers dwindling, or is that not changed at all?
I don't have that statistic, to be honest with you, but what I can tell you is that as a university, because here we're talking about fixed courses, the residential courses at the university, but then we have those students who are here on Erasmus or exchange students. So the difference between an Erasmus and an exchange student is an Erasmus would be coming from an EU institution, an incoming student, and exchange would be coming from a foreign institution which is not specifically
for EU based. They can be from anywhere, those exchange?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We have to have an agreement with the institution.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have these exchange agreements, if it's under Erasmus or if it's under another agreement, the students, they have two options. we have incoming students, and we also send students out.
Okay.
So roughly, I mean, if you want a figure, I can say we get about 500 students every year.
Okay.
And we send about 400, roughly 400 students going out. But this is something that was under the remit of the international office. We don't consider those as recruitment because they are here for a short period of time. But we are seeing, I mean, that some of the students, I mean, nowadays, our local students, they don't want to go to the normal European Union states, but they want also exotic states, like trying some. We have some sign of students who went to China, you know, students who went to Japan to study there. It's not easy, yeah? And also to U.S. I mean, U.S. is also a popular destination for obvious reasons. But yes, there is interest from our students to go overseas. And as well, as I said, the trend nowadays is you finish your undergrad here, and you go and do a master's overseas.
I mean, it's such a valuable education to be living somewhere else amongst different people, different culture.
Yes,
that
yes,
it
yes.
really is such a part of growing up, I think.
I think, and this is based on my personal experience as well, is that if you don't go out of your comfort zone, you won't grow as in career and everything, and even your knowledge, because it may be a very good university like this one, but going out of this university and seeing other institutions, that is already enough to help you understand how other institutions actually operate differently than yours. Sometimes you would, when you go to these institutions, you would say, they're doing this better than we do it. And then you see other things, and you say, we have a better procedure for this, which is much more efficient. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Even the way that you start comparing things, it helps, I believe.
But even like, you know, the cultural aspects of how people learn and how people teach.
Yeah, exactly.
And even, you know, the socializing, the importance of rest or well-being. You know, in every country it must be completely different.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when they come here, it's something that other students can absorb and perhaps entice them to go to one of those other countries for their masters.
That's true.
As well.
I mean, something that I have learned through experiences, like at the Mediterraneans, we have this tendency, especially in Malta, that when we are talking to each other, we don't give enough time to the other person to finish. Okay, we kind of interrupt all the time, and for us, we are accustomed to it. It's how it is. But once I was in Northern Europe, and I acted as a Maltese, and they didn't like it at all. I mean, I've learned through experience, but I've learned that for us, although for us it's acceptable, even if you are arguing about an academic issue, for us it's okay, but for them it's not. And these are things that you learn as you go along, as you said. I mean, they are different from one country to another.
But they're things that stand you in good stead when they are going into the workplace, because it's very unusual today that you'd go to work somewhere with just your nationality.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You know, you're going to, especially in Malta, we have so many, you know, gaming, etc. There's every nationality there. So you have to understand how, you know, the Swedish think or the Danish work or the, you know, the Japanese party or whatever. So it's good to appreciate those things going forwards. So I think it's a fantastic foundation for them. What plans for the future for University of Malta and foreign students?
Well, our plans now, right now, as we speak, is to try and improve our conversion rate. As I said, we are closely following the applicants, because we would like to improve the conversion rate we have from applicants to enrolled students, because. Okay, if you look at the number of applications of foreign students, we are increasing that year after year. We have started with the low-hanging fruits when we started as an office attracting students and promoting university. And now we're also looking at countries such as, for example, Turkey. It's a market that we are researching right now. We are also looking at Eastern European countries like Russia, Ukraine, and these countries. I mean, okay, right now it's not perhaps the best time, but
they're
on our books. I mean, yes, I mean, these are our plans. But if you ask me right now, we are more focusing on internal procedures and internal processes to improve the service we're offering to the applicants. Once that is in place, we will start again working towards having applications from different countries now. Because you can see there is a relationship. I mean, the effort, especially when you're doing it online, there is always, every year, we kind of register about 20% increase on our website traffic, and that converts in an X amount of applications. So if you improve the traffic, there is like this relationship. We will probably improve the number of applications as well. We are still doing that because you cannot stop really and truly. Our marketing efforts keep going. But at the same time, simultaneously, we're working on this blessed conversion, because I really would like to improve that and offer a service. I keep on saying this. Sometimes I perhaps sound like a broken record. We don't have students; we have clients. And when you think on that conceptually as a client, the service that you offer a client, it's better than a service that you offer the student, as we understand it, no?
Yes, they have to leave home, come here.
Yes, but even for the local students, if we perceive them as clients rather than students, that is already enough.
True, actually, I hadn't thought of it that way. So
yeah. And sometimes, which is even worse, so you cannot treat them as products. We're not producing students.
No,
we're offering service to students. And they are our clients.
And offering them a fantastic experience. So
that's right.
Thank you to you and your team. That's Dr. Mario Cassar, who's joined me on this week's interview, A Degree of Interest.